Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next intensive coming up July 19th through the 21st. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us online at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan, and we've got back with us for a second week in a row, Luke Gilkerson from Covenant Eyes. Luke, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Very good. Well, we are excited to kind of continue our conversation. Before I do that, I want to let you know that we are running a special promotion this summer. It's our 10-year anniversary in ministry. And so we are running a special promotion for our Gateway to Freedom workshops where we've got a 50% scholarship offer for any guy that comes to our workshops this summer. That's the next one's coming up. We've got one in Portland, and then we've got one in Georgia, and we've got one in both Texas and Pennsylvania. And so if you'd like to take advantage of that offer, simply go to gatewaymen.com, and you can learn all about how you can sign up for that and take advantage of that 50% scholarship offer. Well, Luke, last week we were talking about some of these stats that you guys have done in a report of pornography statistics with over 250 facts, quotes, and statistics about pornography use. It's your 2013 edition of that. And just as a reminder to our listeners, if you want to get a copy of that, you can go to covenanteyes.com/pornstats. And you can download a copy of that. And like I did last week, I'm going to let you know that, be forewarned, you may be overwhelmed if you go through this entire report, because it's pretty incredible where we are in our culture regarding pornography and how much of an effect it has had in all areas of our lives, in our homes, but also in our workplaces, in our churches. And I wanted to kind of just jump right in here, Luke, and because one of the statistics is talking about they interviewed some college students, and it says that 93% of boys and 62% of girls were exposed to porn before the age of 18. Now, let's talk about that for just a second, because recently I watched a TED Talk where a guy was he was doing a talk, a little 15-minute talk on just the effects biologically on our bodies through pornography and other types of sexual activities, primarily pornography. And what was fascinating to me was that most of these studies that have been done within the last 25 years, they were unable to find a control group, meaning they looked and looked and looked among teenagers and young adults to try to find any who had not already been exposed and been looking at pornography to try to find a control group of, okay, let's look at the brains and the biology of this set of people who have not viewed pornography, and they could not find enough people to form a control group. So I want to kind of get your response to that about how many children, teenagers especially, that we're talking about here. I mean, almost 100% of boys, 93% of boys, and nearly two-thirds of girls have been exposed to porn before they're 18. I find that shocking. I mean, it's just, it's overwhelming.
Right. And by and large, I will say that this is mostly teenagers that are doing this. There's different stats out there you hear on people saying, oh, the average age of exposure is a 12 or 8 or 11 or whatever. I haven't seen too many good stats or at least sources for those kind of stats. But what you do start seeing is a prep. Certainly there are people who are seeing porn as young as 5. And certainly there are people who, by whatever miracle, aren't seeing porn until they turn 17 or something. They're kind of spread all over the place. But generally speaking, what you're seeing is this is something where by the time people turn 13, you're starting to see it out of that same study. You're starting to see this prevalence of as the teenage years ramp up, the search for pornography happens more. So, for instance, 69% of boys and 23% of girls spend at least 30 consecutive minutes viewing internet pornography on at least one occasion. So that's me sitting down in front of a screen looking at as much porn as I can see in a half hour or more. Okay? That's just a minimum. That's the where it starts, a minimum of a half hour or more. So that's nearly 7 out of 10 boys and a quarter of girls are doing that on at least one occasion. Most are doing this on more than one occasion. This is not just like sitting in front of the computer and, oh, a pop-up comes up and I X out of it really quickly and I go away and I tell mom what I saw, right? That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who sat down, found something, either because they were intentionally searching for it or came up on the screen, and they pursued it to watch it for at least a half hour or more. So we're talking half hour into hours of viewing. Okay. And you'll know this, we know this from experience. How much porn can you look at in a half hour? A whole lot of porn. You can see literally hundreds of women in that amount of time. And so this is a very, I think, very dangerous trend that we're seeing, because this is the worst kind of sexual education that we could be giving our kids. To let them just kind of surf aimlessly, looking at whatever they can find.
And it's
kind of scary.
And the statistics bear this out in terms of it being the worst form of education because of what ends up resulting out of all of that exposure to pornography. We talked about it in last week's program about how, there becomes this it's almost like the baseline from which an adolescent will then begin to think about sexuality is from this pornographic viewpoint, which is it's got to be abusive. It's simply a physical act. You almost start to, through pornography, you almost start to look down on, or at least you devalue the need for affection and relationship and closeness and intimacy. And one of the things that the report says here, or that this statistics report says, is that adolescents that were exposed to these sexually explicit websites, they're more likely to have multiple lifetime sexual partners. They're more likely to have had more than one sexual partner in the last 3 months, and they're more likely to have used alcohol or other substances at their last sexual encounter. So these kids that are looking at all these adolescents that are looking at pornography, porn in some ways is becoming a gateway to even more dangerous and unhealthy sexual behaviors in quote unquote real life. So it's no longer just being an image on a screen or a video or a page that they're looking at. Now it's translating into then how they're starting to conduct themselves in their human relationships.
Right. And we have to be careful with the stats, as we always have, because You know, the naysayers about this will point out, well, these studies don't indicate causality. You know, this is, what if it's the other way around? What if this is just people who are more likely to have these multiple sexual partners are also more likely to look at porn,
right?
Which is a good observation. You know, this is true. These don't determine causality. However, when you look at studies that do indicate more of a sense of causality, so for instance, we're going to, there's a famous study done back in the 80s by Bryant. I think it was Dillman Bryant. He was spending time on college campuses showing people pornography. And he had a control group. He had a sort of intermediate group that was seeing a little bit of porn. And then he had a massive group. This was the group that was seeing more porn than anybody. And this was video pornography, right? So this is when porn was really making headway in VHS. So he's showing this video pornography over a 6-week period. He had them watch a total of about 5 hours total, stretched over a 6-week period. So we're talking, you know, a little bit at a time, maybe 45 minutes at a time or so. They're sitting down and watching pornography, and they're doing this once a week. When they compare these groups, it is startling to see the comparisons. When you start seeing the ways that these groups are now understanding sexual beliefs, when you see the charts and graphs on it, it's really interesting. The group that saw more porn, for instance, it was more likely to believe that children don't need to be protected from seeing porn. The group that saw more porn tended to have to devalue things like women's rights. The group that saw more porn tended to want to see more porn. So then after they were brought into a new study, they wanted to see more porn and more hardcore kinds of porn. These are the kind of trends you were noticing. They were more likely to devalue the way their partner, their sexual partner, either boyfriend or husband, or girlfriend or whatever, devalue the way their partner looked or the way they performed in the bedroom. Here's an example of a study that's done to demonstrate some sense of causality in here. I think that's an interesting kind of study. Now, what conclusions we draw from all of this? I think it's that we need to, especially if we're thinking about this on the parental side, is that we need to be absolutely diligent as parents, not just in the protection of our kids, but in the preparation, because we can protect them all day long from all kinds of things. We can put up fences and bigger fences and thicker fences and taller fences and try to prevent them from even being curious about what's on the other side of that fence. But in the end, a day's going to come when they're going to step outside of the fence. And if they're not prepared for what's on the other side of that fence, then we haven't done the job.
I want to say this to our listeners who are out there who are parents, and the vast majority of those who are listening to us are parents. I'm going to share with you something that my wife and I say to each other that generally would not win us any parenting awards. We actually, this is a conversation that we have fairly often, and the conversation goes something like this. The question that we ask each other is, okay, how are we doing at preparing our children to see porn? Now, that is not generally what, you go to a Christian parenting conference, and that's probably not going to be one of the workshops on how to prepare your children for seeing porn.
Right.
Because it's like, whoa, time out. Wait a second. You're supposed to do everything you can to keep them from seeing porn, right? Mm-hmm. Well, kind of in line with what you're talking about, you had better be preparing your kids because they are going to see porn. I mean, listen, we're just telling you
more
these
than likely, yes.
We're just telling you these statistics here. Now, I'd love for a kid to be able to get through. I'd love for a human being to be able to get through their entire life without having seen any pornography. The problem is that what passes even for just good housekeeping magazine covers today, you would not have found on the cover of Playboy magazine in 1960. So we're already seeing there's pornography in front of our eyes kind of no matter where we're going, whether you're at the grocery store, whether you're watching a movie. And I mean, just there's porn around us all the time in terms of stuff that's trying to elicit a sexual response or some sort of arousal type response. And so, you know, my wife and I, we want to try to prepare our kids. How are you going to handle that? Listen, we know you're going to be exposed to things that are clearly not for your good. They're not healthy for you. They're not moving you closer to being a man or woman of integrity, or moving you closer mm-hmm. to your relationship with God and your loved ones. So what are we doing then to prepare them for that? And I think that you're right. That is the more important question than it simply is. Trying to protect them.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not an either or either. It's a both and, of course.
Absolutely, yeah.
We do need to prepare, and a lot of it comes down to this issue of the counterfeit versus the real. Children have got to be raised in homes where a positive expression and understanding and teaching about sexuality is what is presented. Just like if you're working for the FBI and you want to spot counterfeit currency, one of the things that you are trained in is not just the tricks of counterfeiters. That's of course a good thing to be trained in, but you're also trained in what does the real money look like? What does it really look like? And knowing that up, down, left, right, back and backwards, knowing exactly what that looks like. And that's exactly the way it is with sexuality. If you are filled with a vibrant biblical understanding and then seen in the example of your parents of parents who show affection and love to each other and tenderness to each other, who speak about sexuality like it's a good God-given thing, talk about it in all of its beauty, the way the Bible talks about it. And then all of a sudden you're presented with pornography. There's more of a template to judge it against. It's,
right.
It's not just this experience that we get that titillates us. It's something that really causes us to say, wait a second, that's not the kind of thing I learned about what sexuality was. Now we do need to do more than that. It's not just about telling them what sex is. They do need to be prepared for what they're going to see. You know, so it's about telling them that there's what's out there in the world, and how you do that, of course, needs to be sensitive, needs to be age sensitive, and everything. You know, so don't necessarily
find...
go out and tell your 8-year-old today, there's porn online, don't go looking for it.
Right.
Because the first thing they're going to be, well, what's porn? And I'll go type in porn into Google and see what happens.
Right.
That's a bad idea.
You need
to be prepared to how to do it. So
yeah, one of the things that I've found that's interesting is every single guy that I've ever dealt with who's developed a sexual addiction, myself included, our first time exposure to pornography was somewhat scary. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, everybody that I've dealt with, and again, myself too, we were exposed to it when we were kids. And kids, listen, you're just, generally speaking, a child who's exposed to pornography, you don't have the capacity to handle that. You don't know, like you said, a lot of times there's not a reference point to be able to know how to contextualize that. How do you, what do you put, what kind of context do you put that into? Interestingly enough, though, also, if a guy's a sexual addict and he begins going through recovery, begins dealing with this, and he starts to become more sensitive regarding these things, for instance, he's starting to put away porn, he's starting to learn how to actually engage real relationships, he's learning to see his body and see sexuality and see relationships from a perspective that is beautiful and wonderful and God-given. It's interesting to me then that, like, for instance, I had some examples or some experiences during my recovery where I did see pornography. And in those instances, I found it interesting that I had a very similar kind of scared revulsion response to it, like I had had when I was a child. But somewhere along the way, as a child, I had become mm-hmm. numb to that. Then it becomes an addiction. Then you get so far off track from how you were designed to engage your sexuality as you start looking at porn and get involved in sexual addiction that it's kind of only through recovery that you can kind of regain those sensitivities you might have had as a child, where things like that are a little scary. They're a little off-putting. They're, you see, I mean, if I see porn today, it's kind of like, oh, you know, it's disgusting. I don't want to, it's not, because I have a context now to put it in that right. I didn't have as a kid. And you know what I'm saying? So I think that context is really important to be able to start modeling healthy sexuality for kids,
right?
So that porn doesn't set its hook in them to have such an appeal that pulls them away from how they're designed to be sexually.
Well, exactly. We have to realize that with some good teaching, kids can be given a context for how to interpret. And, you know, and I think an easy way for parents to do this is just to use all of the soft core type things, their examples that are just kind of abundant out there, just kind of laying around. So if you're at the store, the grocery store, and you're in a checkout aisle, and there is a magazine cover that is racy, going to that magazine cover, picking up that magazine, turning it around to that it's facing backward, well, letting your son or daughter see you do that, and then when you get out of the store, say, you know why I turned that around? It's because that woman has no, that there's no help for that. That woman is not benefiting herself or anybody else by showing off her body that way. That is not meant for just anyone to see. That is meant for her husband, if she has one. And even that's just a simple example,
right?
That can happen any day. It can happen any time you're out. You could be walking into the mall and going by a Victoria's Secret shop, and if you see your son or daughter kind of gawking and wonder, whoa, because I mean we're naturally wired to look at skin. I mean that's just you're going to be, if there's, you know, 100 people lined up and one of them is naked, that's the one you're going to look at.
Sure, yeah.
Right? So it's very normal to just, your eye is caught by that kind of stuff. But then to be able to direct your son or daughter away from that and say, that's not what their body's for. You know, that God has given them that body not to just display out there for anyone to see.
Right.
This is something that is meant, you know, so talking about modesty issues, those are just examples so that when they have a context for that, now if something were to come along and they were to see something that is more hardcore, they're going to have those memories in their mind of those kind of things. And then of course, teaching about biblical sexuality and all that stuff is very, very important. Doing it younger too. I think this is really key. Start younger. A lot of parents are waiting for adolescence for a lot of these kind of talks. You need to start young, you know, from a young age, giving kids the foundation of, you know, even just the foundation of anatomy and stuff like that is really important at a young age. But then as they're, you know, a young child, 8, 9, 10 years old, beginning some of these preliminary kind of discussions so that when you're finally getting into birds and bees, there's a big context for it. It isn't this big one whopping discussion. Instead, it's multiple ongoing discussions that are going on and something that you can do.
Right. Now, I think, you know, we both wish that we could have a conversation like this and say, and all of this is totally unaffecting those in the church. It's totally unaffecting those who know God. I mean, because, you know, I'd love for us to be able to have that conversation. But the reality is that lust is no respecter of person. It's no respecter of believer, unbeliever, demographic. It doesn't matter. Pornography is an equal opportunity destroyer. So when I think about that, my question to you is, what do you think the church can do to fight this downward moral spiral? Because there's the big questions of our culture, and how can the people of God help in terms of maybe kind of rescuing or educating or helping the culture? But there's also this thing going on within the church of even those people who know God who are drowning in pornography and other things. So how can the church respond to this spiral, do you think?
There is a lot of things churches can do. The first is that leadership in the church, the visible leaders of the church, it needs to be something that is spoken about from pulpits and from platforms. But I also think it needs even more direct and immediate and concentrated attention at times. And that this needs to be something that is, in a sense, normalized, in that a church is going to be saying that we know this is demonstrative, we know this is a problem. If you are the average congregation, then chances are there are many men in this congregation and probably a growing number of women as well who just feel like every time you sit down at a computer, you pray to God you're not going to look at
right.
porn, and a lot of times that does not come true. We want you to know, as the leaders of this church, that we're going to do whatever we can to help you understand what to do here. So it's first normalizing it in that sense. The second thing I think churches should do is to come up with is to nail down their own theology of sanctification, so that they can have an approach to this that doesn't make pornography the taboo sin. So, what do I mean by that? What I mean is, if you've got a congregation that starts, say, a support group or a recovery group for a group of sex addicts or porn addicts or whatever, that's fantastic, wonderful. The issue is that often what can happen in churches like that is that then you have a segregation of this group is for the perverts, and then there's everybody else.
Right.
When churches need a theology of sanctification, they need an understanding, a philosophy of sanctification that says the principles that are being used over here with the perverts is actually something that all of us need. We all need these principles, whatever those principles are. So all the things that are helping these people to change and to seek change in their life are the things that we all need. And how do we do that? How do we normalize those things? So I've heard some fantastic churches out there that are doing this in a wonderful way. They're giving sort of a DNA of how our heart changed, how our people's changed, how does the Spirit of God change people's hearts. They're inserting that DNA into all of their groups, into all of their support groups,
right.
Not just for porn addicts, but they're also doing it for all their small groups too. They're saying, so no matter what it is, whether there's no demonstrative, taboo, external, ruin my life kind of struggle going on, or whether you're dealing with something that's just far more internal and far more subversive kind of sin, whatever it is, that these principles are applicable to all Christians.
Yeah.
What that does is, and when you make that publicly known, what that does is, then the groups become less segregated.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a much more easy transition. As someone is, let's say they've attended a group of porn addicts for a while, and now they're saying, I feel like this sort of recovery period of my life is kind of drawing to a close or whatever, is they're drawing into other types of small group experiences in the church. Those groups already have that DNA built in.
Now, Luke, we have about 1 minute left, and I'd love for you to answer the question of, what would you say to the person who's listening who is drowning in porn right now? I mean, how would you help them to get started on a path to wholeness? What would you suggest to them?
1 minute, huh? All right, here we go. first thing I would say is there is hope. Know that there's hope. If you've got a very, very big God that guarantees that there is hope. So first, understand that your problem may be enormous, but God is far bigger than your problem. Mm-hmm. So first, know that. Second is know that through the gospel, that hope can be experienced, and you need other people around you to help you teach that to you, because you probably don't believe the words I'm saying right now as I'm saying these things. You probably don't even believe that it's possible that there's hope. And if you're that guy or that girl who doesn't believe that there's hope, you need to surround yourself with people who can believe it for you until you do.
Yeah. Well, we've been having Luke Gilkerson here with Covenant Eyes, and we're glad that you've been with us, Luke. And we look forward, listeners, to having you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.